And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, and welcome to today's show. We offer a full spectrum today of wine stories, starting with Italian wine culture, the Vancouver food and wine scene, and we'll also be having a 101 discussion on how to begin to collect wine for those of you who may be considering starting a wine cellar. Never an easy challenge, but we're going to give you a few do's and don'ts. For collecting wine, I know a lot about the don'ts because I have a cellar full of wine. A lot of them I don't should have bought, but you learn as you go along. That's the fun of it. Before we start the show, though, I wanted to share some wines with you. It's, as you know, but you can tell by the weather outside in this time of the year, things are brightening up and warming up, and getting out on the patio is something that all of us are doing. But we're looking for wines that are not too complicated but delicious. I always, I just never want to drink wine that's not interesting. But you'd be surprised at what you can get at for very little money, despite what everybody says about how expensive wine is. So my first pick today is a very interesting wine called Arrogant Frog. Check that out. It's a Cabernet Merlot from Languedoc. Languedoc known for its quality and the number of wines they produce. So you can find this wine in BC liquor stores. It's $12.99. You'll be so impressed with this wine, especially if you're a barbecue freak and you do a lot of steak and beef and things that require red wine. Arrogant Frog, it's called Ribbit Red. Probably one of the best buys in all of the Okanagan is the Meyer Chardonnay. This is the regular everyday Meyer Chardonnay. Sells for $21.83. And comes out of the same chute as all the great Meyer Chardonnays. It's hand-picked. It's done with very little intervention. You're going to just love this wine if you like smart, complex Chardonnay that's easy to drink and is not too expensive. Finally, the wine for you to slash out on is the Avaleda Castle Garcia Vino Verde. If you haven't been drinking Vino Verde, this is the summer to start. You can buy this in a can for $5.99. I recommend the bottle at $15.99. It's a beautiful, fizzy, green apple, quince-style wine. Check it out. Avaleda Castle Garcia. You'll find it in the Portuguese section. Now, on today's show, Filippo Bartolotta, he joins us. He's an Italian wine journalist. We're going to talk about Italian white wines. Giacomo Sisti from Umana Rocky. We're going to talk about some of the most underrated wines in Italy coming out of the winery of the year, the European winery of the year, Umana Rocky. Steve Rutherford joins us. He's the executive chef from the Weston Bay Shore. We're going to talk about what's happening there this summer, inside and out. But up next, Warren Porter, president of Iron Gate Auctions, joins us to talk about collecting wine. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and we are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Hello, I'm Anthony Gismondi with 2 Minutes in Cowichan. Our guest is Kenzie Knight from Tourism Cowichan. Kenzie, Cowichan truly comprises some amazing small towns and communities.
Yeah, that's right, Anthony. Cowichan features a really unique collection of communities, each unique and known for their talented artists and rich cultural heritage. For example, Duncan is known as the City of Totems, so visitors can go on a self-guided walking tour to see over 40 totem poles, which are handcrafted by Indigenous carvers, while learning about the cultural significance and stories of each totem.
And you'd really want transportation to get around for some of these scenic drives.
Yeah, just a short drive from Duncan is the historic fishing village of Cowichan Bay, which features a renowned selection of restaurants and artisan shops. And you can also visit the Cowichan Bay Maritime Center to learn about maritime history and witness the art of wooden boat building.
And Kenzie, what are some of the important festivals to note that are coming up on the horizon?
There's a few. So just minutes outside of Lake Cowichan is Laketown Ranch, which hosts Sunfest, one of Canada's largest country music festivals. And then there's also the family-friendly Cowichan Valley Bluegrass Festival, which happens every Father's Day weekend in June. And then in downtown Duncan, you can take in free live music every day while the 39 Days of July Festival is running.
And we shouldn't forget about the arts. Cowichan's a hotbed for that.
Absolutely. Chemainus is a vibrant arts community in Cowichan that is world famous for its large collection of outdoor murals, which depict the town's history. And just down the road from Chemainus is Ladysmith, a heritage town. Strolling along First Avenue and trying Old Town Bakery's famous cinnamon buns is the perfect way to spend an afternoon.
Kenzie, thanks so much for a postcard view of things to do in Cowichan.
You're most welcome.
Plan your trip at tourismcowichan.com. Till next time, I'm Anthony Gismondi.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Joining us now is one of our favorite guests, Warren Porter. He's the president of Iron Gate Auctions. And I thought we'd talk to Warren today about how to start a wine collection. What is a, quote, wine collection? What is collectible? Those kind of ideas if you want to get involved in selling it down the road or watching it appreciate, how you do that from scratch. Warren, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Anthony. Nice to talk to you.
Good to have you. How does one define a wine collection in your mind?
Well, that's kind of subjective, but I would say, you know, a collection would be typically something over 100 bottles, usually. It's something that they're looking to not immediately consume, okay?
Yeah.
So you're going to start to gather wine and find the, you know, the different stages that you like to drink it at and what have you. So it's not usually the number, it's your intention is with it.
Yeah, and so you just mentioned the time. So also, I think a key factor is buying wine that ages. How, you know, you can't just buy any old wine.
Well, yes, you're right. I mean, and typically age-worthy wines have a price tag to match very frequently. And so, you know, the if you're looking to have something that you're going to, you know, drink down the road, you would purchase a case or a half a case of something and then drink it at different stages, which helps you appreciate the nuance of the aging of that wine.
Yeah. Well, what sort of quantity should people buy? Like, what works for you as an auctioneer when someone comes to you? If they come to you with 100 different bottles of wine, I imagine that's a bit of a nightmare.
When you say if they're looking to acquire or they're looking to sell?
Well, if they start collecting wine, how many bottles of each wine might they lay away in your mind? What would be a good number?
I recommend they start buying in the millions, Anthony. That's kind of my stock answer for everything. That's a good strategy. Anything less than that is just amateur. No, you can start at anything. And look, we're not your single source, right? People buy a lot of things at the liquor store, but those are typically young wines. So if you get a good relationship with, you know, one of your local liquor stores in Vancouver, they bring in some great wines, and we then augment it with back vintage wines, which is typically what we get, because when people are selling, they're not typically selling wines they just acquired. So we're the place to buy the older wines. The liquor stores are the place to buy the younger wines.
I see. Do you assemble wines from numerous people to put together a lot, or is
there
it
can
usually...
There can be up to 100 consigners in an auction.
Right.
So we bring them in constantly, and they're anywhere from, you know, usually about, 5,000 to 10,000 minimum up to, you know, a million.
Yeah.
And so they're constantly coming in from all over the place. And yes, sometimes it's a single consignor sale when it starts getting up to a million, million and a half, but that's pretty rare. Usually it's an aggregation of many different consigners from many different places.
Right.
In Canada.
Yeah. What about how would you caution people about storing wine if let's say they're gonna start a collection and they're probably gonna take maybe 10 years to put it together or whatever? What sort of storage conditions do you recommend?
Well, if you've got a really fancy home cellar with proper temperature and humidity control, that's great. You've got them on hand, and it's also part of enjoying your collection, the visceral feeling of just having it there with you. If not, I don't usually recommend storing them, you know, for their long life in a wine fridge, which often have lower humidity, which isn't good for the corks. A place like, you know, there are wine storage places in Vancouver. One that I like in particular is 13C. They've just done a big expansion. I'm going to go down and tour it in about a half an hour. And so those are good places, because if as a seller I can see that you've stored it in a place like 13C, I promote that on the sale, and that gives people a real sense of comfort when they're buying it.
Yeah,
because provenance is everything.
Yeah. And you're talking about the condition of the wine in the bottle, because we, you know, when you buy a wine that's 15 or 20 years old, you never really know what you're going to get. So we put part of that on you, right, Warren?
Well, sure. We do a lot of due diligence for that, right? Because I don't want somebody to open something that they're not happy with. You can never guarantee, but I do like to do some, you know, we definitely do our due diligence to find out where it's come from, how long you've held it, how you store it. I probably reject, I don't want to say a collection, because collections come in different sizes, but I'll reject a submission every day, every 2 days, at least.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm wondering about when I started off my cellar, you know, everybody was buying Bordeaux, basically. What's it like today? Is that the thing that people need to buy? Is there so many other things out there? How do we quantify where to start or where to go to collect wines?
Well, a lot of it's your palate, and a lot of it's your travels, right? So, I mean, yeah. You go to Italy, you have a penchant for Italian wines for a while. It's really about discovering different wines, figuring out what you like, and beginning to collect those. It's also about accepting the fact that your palate is going to change throughout your life, so don't overload yourself in when you start. Likely big fruit-forward wines are going to be your jam. You know, Australian Shirazes, California Cults, a lot of those wines. I mean, I can't drink now if you're holding me down and pouring it down my throat. I just hate them. But but people's palates change. So yeah. Don't have all of that. We often get a lot of collections that are pruning. Okay, so in other words, they had bought a lot of those big wines, and lots of people love them, and it's just your palate changes. And so then they come to us and they sell those, and then they keep their Barolos, their Burgundies, their other wines.
Is there an average age that you sell, if you were looking at any auction, what the average age of the bottles would be in an auction?
It's a good question. Spot. I don't really think that there's an average age per se. I like having, you know, a chock load of great vintages, 95, 96, 89, 90, yeah. 2000s. You know, we were drinking some 2003 Bordeaux's the night before last at a client's home that were just absolutely perfect. Yeah. And so now there really isn't an average. It depends on, you know, where they had come from, the various collectors.
Yeah. Well, I know I always keep my eye out. There's a certain number of people who say, I might even include myself in that when this is one of the best vintages we've seen in a long time, that's a good clue that's the kind of wine you might want to lay down. In a cellar.
Well, they've got such great techniques and winemaking ability now that they didn't always have in the past. They can, you know, they can take sometimes a little bit of a less than vintage and make it particularly good. There are vintages that we avoid for sure. I hate white Burgundy from 98 to 2002. It's just got way too much oxidization. I'm usually shy on Bordeaux from a lot of the 70s, things like that. But those are just things you get to know after a while.
Yeah. Our guest is Warren Porter. He's the president of Iron Gate Auctions. We were talking about collecting a wine. Where does Iron Gate fit into the collecting cycle? Do you feel like you come in at the end, or are you talking to people at the start, or how's that?
It's actually a great question, because it's almost the entire lifespan of a collector. So we're there for you at the beginning to acquire things that you can't, you know, that you might want to drink now, because it's not like you walk down to the store and buy an 86 Latour.
Yeah.
And so we're there for you at the beginning. We're there for you in the middle when you're pruning, as we just talked about. If you have overloaded yourself in wines that you no longer appreciate. We're there to help you prune those and find a new home for those. Mm-hmm. And then at the, I don't want to say at the end, but, you know, because there's various reasons people sell their collections, but we're there when you need to liquidate as well or choose to, because, you know, a lot of people, they age and they just don't drink as much anymore.
Yeah.
And it, there's a lot of different reasons. So we're kind of there for every stage in a collector's lifespan.
Right. Well, you're very busy. You got a bunch of auctions coming up, both spirits and wine. I notice more and more spirit auctions. Tell us a little bit about what's coming up at Iron Gate.
Yeah, so we're now doing a spirits auction pretty much with every wine auction, and they close one day before and after the other.
Right.
When this is airing, we'll be right in the middle of both the wine and spirits auction that are ending on May the 6th,
I think
you said it was. Yeah, May 6th and May the 7th, yeah.
Yeah.
Spirits are really increasing a lot. We've been, you know, it's our 20th anniversary this month, and so we're known for wine. And so the spirits game was a slower one to build up, but I brought in a great director of spirits named AJ Bardwaj. He runs that division for us, and he's really building a great
right.
business there. And we're starting to become known for spirits as well. So now we're doing a lot more of them. So, yeah. A few big ones that are coming up. The consignments that are coming in now are being slotted for September.
Okay.
We're full, of course, for the one that's just around the corner. We're full for the one in June. We kind of keep them at a mid-estimate of about $1.5 million, $1.7 million, and then kind of cap it out at that.
Yeah.
So right now we're filling up September.
Just because I don't know, are spirits ageless?
You know, I'm not the best spirits guy, which is why I brought in an expert. So I would think so, but he might look at me sideways and go, "No, Warren, what are you talking about?" So I don't know the answer to that. That would be my guess.
Okay.
But I'm not sure. When we decided to do spirits, Anthony,
yeah.
I found an expert and I said, look, we can't be great at it on our own because we're wine people.
Yeah.
So I have to bring somebody in because if we're not going to be great at it, I don't want to do it at all.
That's
why he's here.
That's what I keep telling food and restaurant people. They can't be great at wine because they're not wine people, but they don't believe me. Warren, always great to catch up with you. Irongate.com for more info on collector services. And
Irongate.wine.
.wine, sorry. I think people can reach you somehow as well if they have really pointed questions. You seem like the kind of guy
who helped
them out.
I'm always available. If I got my phone with me, I pick it up. So, yeah, you can get my contact information. Or, you know, we've got lots of staff coast to coast. So.
Yeah.
Happy to help. People have lots of questions. We're happy to answer.
Right on. Irongate.wine. Thanks so much, Warren.
Thanks, Anthony.
Yep. Warren Porter, president, Irongate Auctions. Still ahead, Steve Rutherford, he's the executive chef, and Mitchell Kerr, he's the director of restaurant and bars at the Weston Bay Shore. They join us to talk about what's happening all summer in Vancouver's Coal Harbour.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Penticton, a perfect place to connect with nature. Plan your May-long trip and attend the various events at the Meadowlark Nature Festival, May 16th through 20th, at numerous locations throughout the South Okanagan. The Meadowlark Nature Festival connects people with nature, engaging and inspiring them to protect the unique habitats and species of this region and our planet. Go to visitpenticton.com/events for more upcoming festivals and events in Penticton.
It's time to think turkey and buy BC. Your BC turkey farmers work hard all year to bring high-quality products to your table. Whether it's a weeknight dinner or a special occasion, turkey is always a delicious source of lean protein. Next time you're planning dinner, think about picking up some ground turkey, a breast roast, or turkey thighs to switch things up for your family. Find recipes, cooking tips, and more at bc.canadianturkey.ca. This ad is supported by British Columbia's Buy BC Partnership Program.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at dioravines.com.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia, across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Steve Rutherford. He's the executive chef of the Weston Bay Shore in Vancouver. Steve, welcome back. Great to see you.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You look younger than the last time I met you.
Very kind.
That must be nice to work in a kitchen where you get younger all the time.
Something like that.
Yeah. Spring, is that a great time to be a chef in,
oh, it's
in the springtime?
Yeah, everything's starting to sprout. Everything's coming up. Yeah. It's just such a rejuvenating time at the hotel, right? We have a lot of great things that are happening. You know, the menus are starting to change, and we're starting to really get into the seasonal things, yeah. Connecting with farmers, local
yeah,
producers.
I was thinking maybe you change suppliers a little bit from the winter to the summer sort of thing? Or
We do. You know, I mean, and that's, like I say, when the farmers are starting to get going and we connect yeah. with those producers that can really kind of bring, you know, bring our menus to the next level, yeah. you know, heading into the summer.
Do people show up at your door, like growers? Is that an old myth or?
It's a bit of a myth, but, yeah. you know, I mean, we actually try to go out and get them.
Right.
Right. That's the biggest thing. I mean, we're a big company, we're a big hotel, but yeah. at the end of the day, we still want to partner with local.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, but what would be one thing that's going to come into the hotel, one food item in the next while, one ingredient that you're looking forward to seeing?
I think for me, you know, the one thing it's already kind of out there is halibut. Halibut season's upon us.
Right.
That's really, really important.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to start getting into some wild salmon products here a little bit later on in the spring and summer.
Yeah.
But the big thing for me, the number one thing for me is always those 7-8 weeks of springtime starting in May. It is spot prawn festival in spot
oh,
prawns.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love them. Those, that's what I live for
yeah.
In this industry. And, you know, the season is so short. It's anywhere from about 7 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just such a great product. And there's so much it, behind them.
There seems like, to me, they're a little bit like winemaking, too. The less you do, the better the outcome.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah. It's one of those things. Myself, personally, I'm the type of guy who just likes to pop them on the grill or just do a quick you know, saltwater boil to them and stuff
yeah.
like that, and they just a little bit of maybe a little bit of soy sauce and some, yeah. some fresh butter, drawn butter. It's a pretty amazing thing.
Less is more.
You're right.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Our guest is Steve Rutherford. He's the executive chef of the Weston Bay Shore in Vancouver. Well, I thought we'd start with Mother's Day. That's always a big event around town. What's happening at the Weston Bay Shore for that, and how can people get involved in that?
Absolutely. The biggest thing is we have our H2 buffet, mm-hmm. And we're going to be doing some brunch offerings and lunch offerings. So, and then the big thing is always our seafood displays that we have there. So we have that going from 11:30 onwards on Mother's Day. We always get a lot of people in there, a lot of popularity behind that one.
Yeah.
And then we also have our H2, our H tasting lounge. We have the Secret Garden, so we do have some offerings going on in our Secret Garden. It's the last day of Secret Garden
yep.
in the domes, I mean, those ones are always a little bit coveted. Those spots will definitely yeah. fill up pretty quick. So
what is in this seafood brunch? What is it? A wide range of things?
The biggest thing for the seafood is our big display. So
yeah.
we're talking about there's honey mussels, and we've got local clams, and we do Dungeness crab, and
oh,
so
wow.
that's right on the big you know, seafood display. We would do a big massive table in the middle of the yeah. of the buffet. So it's great.
I love talking to chefs. So if I can just get a tip, because as you mentioned, it's halibut season. What's the simplest thing for me to do at home if I'm, you know, a lot of people are afraid of fish, of cooking fish, not eating it, but cooking it. What's a simple way to handle halibut?
You know, the biggest thing is obviously fresh is best.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit of salt and pepper is a little bit of, I use grapeseed oil when I cook and sear,
yeah.
and it's a quick pan sear and then finished in the oven. And you have to be patient with it. A lot of people always take a bit too much time. They're like, oh, it's done. I got to flip it over.
Yeah.
You got to be patient with that.
Yeah.
Then usually what we do is we do a really nice sear on it, turn it around for a flip, and then just pop it into a really hot oven for about 3-4 minutes, depending on how yeah. thick it is, how big it is. That's the simplest thing you can do.
Do you touch it in the end, or how do you know when it is? Is that necessary, or is that the movies?
A bit movies. There's a bit of experience behind it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
more
a pressure.
About the timing, I guess.
It's a timing, but
yeah.
I've been doing this for a few years, so you know, I mean, you just kind of get used to it, and,
yeah.
and it's experience. And you know, for people that are at home, you know, you can use a temperature probe if you'd like. You know, usually we hit around 135 to 145. That's where you want to kind of take it out because it's going to still continue to cook.
Great.
Yeah.
And, well, we've got to move on, but eating seasonally has really, like, especially seafood has been accepted now. Would you say people understand there's a season for these things? And
I think so. And you mean there's a lot of discussion out there about the products that were that are available and how they're being produced, you know, within our province and across the nation. And I think a lot of people are aware of it, of you know, how to deal with those shortfalls when we don't have things. And you know, you really have to just you know, accept the product for when it is in the season, and we just kind of try to adjust around that.
Right. Our guest is Steve Rutherford. He's executive chef of the Weston Bay Shore in Vancouver, who's walked up to our studios today. Thanks so much for doing that. We're not too far apart. Let's talk a little bit about your dinners. You have done a number of special dinners. You have a long table distillers dinner coming up in sometime in May.
That's correct. So in the week of around the 20th of May, that's just right, obviously, right after the long weekend. We've got a Florida Canna distillers dinner that we're doing in H2. Our pit master, Homer Baeza, he does a fantastic job with those. He's done one with Bushmills. He's done another one with tequila. They've been really successful, and we're starting to see a lot of people come back. So it's a little bit, it's fun. It's fun for me, it's fun for him, and it's fun for the whole team.
I mean, it's weird because I'm a wine guy, but I can't imagine drinking spirits with food. It must be a different experience.
It's a balance. You have to get that proper balance.
Yeah.
And a lot of trial and error.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like fun.
That's fun.
Well, I like two things you said, less is more and balance.
Yeah.
These are great tools for people to understand.
Absolutely.
Okay, so people can look forward to that. They can get that information just by going onto the website, and it'll get posted, and they can get themselves a seat at that long table. Will that be inside or outside? Or does it depend on?
We'll see how the weather's looking. I mean, it'd be weather dependent. It is, you know, in H2, it's if the weather's a little bit off, it's not very pleasant there. So we'll definitely get in there. It's when you get into the nice summer months that it's absolutely fantastic out there. The pool's there, great courtyard.
Yeah,
there's a great feel.
Yeah. In the mountains, everything is there in Cole Harbour. Like it's a beautiful setting.
Yep.
I want to talk a little bit about tea. Apparently, the afternoon tea's gone crazy. Do chefs get involved in tea, or just the food, or both, or is that another thing you got to taste and match?
The tea, I leave that up to the professionals in regards to the actual tea, but the food and the pastry, it's a fantastic collaboration between myself and our pastry chef, Martha Ebro. So she does an absolutely fantastic job with the pastries. And, you know, Winnie the Pooh has been a huge success for us. We rolled it out middle of February.
Right.
And it's right now we're sold out straight up until June 30th.
Wow.
Which is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
And we're even talking about maybe extending it just to make sure that we try to get a few people that are still...
And you've worked... Now, you have bees, too, do you not? Or
that's correct,
Do you sleep at all? Or, I mean, honestly, tell me about this bee program.
So we have an apiary. The bees are not there right now. They're on their winter vacation, I call it.
Yeah.
They'll come back Mother's Day.
Okay.
Or around that time.
Yeah.
And I'm actually really excited about it because I'm actually going to be doing a bee course at the end of this month just to get a little bit more involved with it and feel a little bit more comfortable with them.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you're making honey from them, or you're getting the honey.
That's correct. Yeah. We use the honey, the frames that come out that are full of honey. We take them and use them on our buffet for breakfast so people can see it. And we use it around the hotel. So
are you selling it in the hotel shop?
We do. We have our tea and co coffee shop. So there's some that you can purchase some of the jars there.
Yeah.
And we also use them for amenities for a guest in the hotel.
Big fancy hotel has a fried chicken Fridays. What's that all about?
Well, there's nothing like fried chicken Fridays, and it's such a popular thing.
Yeah.
Once again, Homer's done a fantastic job with that, and we just kind of keep rolling with it. And the great part is you can actually upgrade it. You can make it a bougie fried chicken bucket with a 12-gram tin of Northern Divine caviar and some local sparkling wine. So
that's so good.
Lot of fun. Yeah.
I can't let you go until I talk about my favorite thing is Sunday suppers, because you have a rotating menu, but 50% off on the wine list.
That's correct. Yeah. So wow. Just to get people, you know, I mean, we want to entice people. It's a family event, and I really want to kind of drive that. And it's some really great things that we're doing there. And, you know what I mean? Like I said, we rotate the menu about once a month. So, yeah.
And you're right about, I mean, you're very welcoming of families. So people mm-hmm. with kids and that, they don't have to be afraid about showing up with two or three kids. And
absolutely not. Yeah. Very approachable in H2. So,
yeah. And at this point, I mean, you're getting a lot of people. I think if I lived in the West End, I would go there. But mm-hmm. but you're getting a lot of British Columbians just locally now or provincially coming to the hotel.
We get a lot of conferences that come into the hotel from across the nation, to be honest, and across North America. And it's great to have them come in and see what we're doing. And you know what, in my opinion, is probably one of the best smokehouses in the city. And the lounge is absolutely fantastic as well.
I hear happy hour's been extended in many places in town. Is it happening at the Bay Shore? Or?
Yeah, we've rolled out a very robust happy hour menu and H tasting lounge with our menu change last month. So it's been fantastic. That goes from 3 to 5 daily. And then we've got a great program in H2 in the early evenings, so for the first hour, so we have some great treats there. So
and who knows, maybe the Canucks will go 2 or 3 series.
That's well,
and
let's
really
let's,
fill up the lounges.
Let's hope
bars.
They go 4. So
yeah, wouldn't that be nice? Look, I've been watching them for 52 years, so if they go 4, I'll probably drop dead. Yeah. Hey, really great to catch up with you.
Absolutely.
Thanks for your time, too.
It's
I know
my
how
pleasure.
Busy you are.
Yep.
I can say that we've been talking with Steve Rutherford. He's the executive chef of the Western Bay Shore Vancouver, which was our home away from home at the Vancouver International Wine Festival. We had a great time in the hotel and walking back and forth along. It's perfect access to Stanley Park and all along the waterfront. You can't beat it. Book yourself a couple of days and check the place out. Up next, from Berdicchio to Montepulciano, we'll take you to a winery that works according to the principles of organic farming, Umani Rocchi, one of my favorite Italian wineries. They're a leader in environmental, economic, and social sustainability. Still to come, Giacomo Sisti. He's the export manager for Umani Rocchi.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at liberestates.com. Simply great wine.
Attention wine connoisseurs, Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Penticton, a perfect place for outdoor adventures this spring. After a full day of activities, stop in for a visit to one of almost 100 area wineries, many that are now reopened after their winter hibernation. Enjoy this quieter time of year with an intimate spring wine tasting and a chance to sample some Okanagan vintages. Dine in world-class locally sourced restaurants too. It's the perfect destination for a relaxing spring getaway. Before you go, check the website for information on wine tours and winery events. Go to visitpenticton.com.
This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Welcome back. Hello, British Columbia. You're listening to the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Giacomo Sisti. He's the export manager, area manager for Umani Rocchi, which is a winery that's been around a long time in BC. Maybe the newest generation doesn't know much about it, but they should because you're making fantastic wine. Great to have you on the show. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Are you enjoying Vancouver? Or?
A lot. Yeah. I'm a little bit on jet lag still, but...
We all power through that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's start with Umani Rocky. Maybe let's start with where it is, because it's a little out of the way from the normal regions. Perhaps people know about Italian wines.
Yeah, basically, the winery was founded in the 50s in Marche. So yeah. Marche is in the central Italy, east coast, just in front of the Adriatic.
Right in front of the Adriatic.
Yeah, right in front, on the other side of Tuscany, let's say, just to give you an idea. So Tuscany faces the Tyrrhenian Sea. On the west coast, we are in the east coast, so on the other side.
Yeah.
And the winery started with the Verdicchio production in the 50s. Then in the middle 60s, we moved more on the coastal part of Marche for the Conero appellation, so the Montepulciano for the Marche region. Mm-hmm. And then the next step was in 2000 when the family, the Bianchi Bernetti family purchased an estate in Abruzzo. So we are now covering three different territories, two in Marche and one in Abruzzo region.
And making kind of a wide range of wines too.
It's
an interesting range of wines.
Definitely, because the winery has been investing a lot in all the autochthon varieties from the Adriatic coast, we can say. So we span from Verdicchio to Montepulciano in Marche, Pecorino in Abruzzo. Yeah. We have in Marche also autochthon grapes like Lacrima di Moro d'Alba, Passerina, Bianchello del Metauro. The family has nowadays almost 250 hectares spread between the two regions in different locations, one of the most located for these grapes. So we really like to make wines and to make different kind of wines.
Well, one of the most successful wines that you have in this market is the Verdicchio. Let's start with that grape. What can you tell us about the grape?
Yeah, Verdicchio, let's say nowadays it's a really, really cool grape variety. I would say almost trendy nowadays because it's a not aromatic white wine from Italy. So it's not too strong on the nose, but gives all its best on the palate. Fantastic freshness, acidity, nice minerality. Also very well balanced with Casal di Serra, which is one of the selections of Verdicchio that the winery has been making since 1983, so over 40 years that the family produces Casal di Serra, so one of the iconic wine for the appellation Verdicchio de Castelli di Iesi.
It's a delicious wine. You hit it on the nose. The minerality, the freshness of this wine, it's like when I write about this wine, I think it's such a perfect wine to drink in Vancouver, on the west coast of Vancouver, because of we have such a variety of seafood here, and this does so well with so many different kinds of seafood. As you know, on the Adriatic, but we have a lot of seafood here, and especially in the deep, cold water. It's a very interesting match. Not very expensive. This wine is like $20, $22 in Vancouver. It's a giveaway. And now it's under screw cap, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
it
has been for a couple of years now?
Couple of years.
We love it. I often was drinking and wondering, why don't they just put a screw cap on this? Please put a screw cap on this, because I love how it, you know... I mean, the corks are fine, but they seem to just shave off that top 5% of the really great aromas and flavors in the wine. And now this wine is so pure in the glass. I can't recommend it enough. We're drinking the 2022. It's a Classico Superiore. Of course, it's from Umani Rocky. We should talk a bit about the winery, because it's now become a highly awarded winery in Europe.
We are really, really honored because just a few months ago in October, we have been awarded by Gambero Rosso, which is considered the most influential wine reviewer in Italy and one of the most famous in Europe for wine. We have been awarded the Winery of the Year 2024. Yeah. So an incredible achievement by the Umani Rocky Winery, by the family, which has been investing so much since the 50s on these grapes, on these vineyards, always investing in buying new vineyards and distributing also the wines all over the world, because we now export in almost 60 countries.
Wow.
All over the world. So we are considered one of the ambassadors for sure of Marche wines, Verdicchio, Conero, and so on in many countries in the world.
Well, I think Verdicchio, I mean, it doesn't join. It's always been a part of. But for me, like, it's one of those selection of Italian white wines now that's getting a lot of attention. Yeah. One, because of the high quality, and two, because of the really fair price, too. So, you know, we were talking about Lugana the other day. Of course, so many other wines, Arnais, the Timorasso, all these wines are really getting their due now. Mm-hmm. They're great food wines, too. I think that's what helps them a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And especially, I think that nowadays, if you see the numbers, I like to see the numbers sometimes on online, the figures of the the sales of wine all over the world.
Yeah.
And what we see is that white wines are growing, red wines are a little bit declining nowadays, and especially white wines with this kind of style, more elegant, mineral, refreshing, are getting all the attention, especially not too much aromatic wines, something that is more versatile and that you can really match with different kind of food, and Verdicchio is there.
I think that even if we think of Europe as a very sophisticated market, but it's really a maturation of palates of maybe younger or middle-aged people now who drank a lot of red wine, maybe too much in some ways. So I don't know if red wine's falling off or it's just sort of a rebalancing of what it is with consumers, because there's so much great white wine. And I don't think they appreciated it before. And, of course, it wasn't that good before.
Yeah.
What I like now is that people have discovered big flavor in red wines. So now they go back to white wine looking for flavor. And, you know, a lot of these wines used to, you know, forgive me, they had a lot of flavors of cardboard in them back in the day, Italian white wines. They weren't that interesting. Now they're terrific. Anyway, I love this wine. 2022, you can buy it for $22 in Vancouver. It's everywhere. Let's move on to this Lacrima di Moro di Alba. That's an interesting wine.
Yeah, really interesting, because it's one of the really extremely aromatic red wines from Italy. It's an autochthon grape of Marche region that you can find only in the municipality of Morro d'Alba, a very, very little town in the Marche region. You have to produce this wine in Morro d'Alba, and you have to bottle also the wine in Morro d'Alba. So it's a little bit tricky. We have to bottle the wine with mobile bottling trucks, but we have really a wine that is extremely aromatic and fantastic floreality on the nose, a nice palate, which in my opinion goes a little bit in contrast with the nose, with more structure, more clean and dry finale, so with some personality on the palate.
Yeah. And Lacrima, this is the tears, or the translation?
The tear, because the grapes are really big berries, just like small bombs. And when the grapes are completely ripe, sometimes if you are not fast enough to harvest the grapes, it pops out a drop of juice, just like a tear.
Like a teardrop.
Yeah, like a teardrop.
Wow.
And that's why the name Lacrima di Moro d'Alba, so the tear from Morro d'Alba, the village where it's made.
Wow. Well, the wine's delicious. It's also available here in Vancouver at $27. It's also a great value.
Yeah, still fantastic.
What would you serve with that? What would be an interesting food to have with it?
It's a fantastic wine. All year long, we can drink it in the winter, also with some charcuterie, pork, meats, traditional Italian dishes like pasta. What I really like, and that I think is special for this grape, Lacrima di Moro d'Alba, is in the summer. If we chill it, maybe only 20 minutes, and then we serve it, you know, we don't lose the aromatics, but the wine becomes really smooth and with a fantastic drinkability.
Wow.
And really, really like it to enjoy it also in the summer.
Yeah. My guest, by the way, is Giacomo Sisti. He's the export area manager for Umani Rocky in Marche. So now, Marche, if people want to go and visit you, first of all, what, maybe if they land in Rome is the best start to get there? Or what's the best way to get there?
Yeah. I mean, if you're coming from abroad, from Canada, Rome is just like 3 hours drive from Marche and from our headquarters, close to Ancona, which is the capital of Marche.
Okay.
I know in Canada you have huge spaces, and you have three hours for you is nothing.
Yeah. No.
And
it's a drive to work.
Yeah. And we have a wonderful hotel just in front of the harbor of Ancona, in front of the port. and that's a fantastic spot to start your tour in Marche, and also to visit Tumani Ronchi. We have in our new website many experiences, different kind of tastings that you can book directly online.
Yeah,
or
great.
Contacting us if you like something more customized or suggestions about the region and the things to do in our area.
Right on. Giacomo, always great to catch up with you and to hear something, hear about the news from Umani Rocky, which is really on a great roll. And congratulations on such a great award, the 2024 Winery of the Year by Gambero Rosso. That's a big deal. For bringing my favorite wine, the Verdicchio, the Casal de Serra. Such a lovely wine and one that works so well in Vancouver. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
That was Giacomo Sisti, Export Area Manager, Umani Ronchi. Up next, we're super excited to be joined by a passionate journalist exploring the world through the lens of wine, travel, and culture. Are you ready to uncover an unconventional Italy? Up next, Italian wine journalist Filippo Bartolotta.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Many people ask me which wines they should buy. My first question is, what do you like? Because when I know what they prefer, I can nudge them left or right to something similar, but often better at the same price. But if you don't like the wine, nothing I can say will change your mind. Taste is a personal thing, so ultimately, it's up to you to find a wine writer who aligns with your taste and start from there. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and I invite you to visit my website, gismondionwine.com, to find out if we can agree on something to drink tonight.
Now, back to BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, it's Anthony Gismondi. Earlier this year, we had a chance to catch up with Filippo Bartolotta, wine writer and educator, and he was the keynote speaker at the 2024 Vancouver International Wine Festival. We had a talk about the rise of Italian white wines at home in Italy and abroad, and here's that conversation. Filippo, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Yeah, you're looking good. Have you had fun in Vancouver?
Oh yeah, I just I love the dim sum scene. Just went to a very nice place. Apparently, the place where all the psalms go with Canadian psalms, and they brought wines in the morning.
Yeah.
So fantastic.
Nice. Nice. You're like, are you moving to Vancouver? Or what's going on here? Do I have to worry about you now coming here?
a dodgy Italian in Vancouver. I travel a lot, but there are some places where you somehow...
Yeah, you make a connection.
Better than others, yeah. And so this is my third time in 9 months.
Yeah.
And I made a point about visiting actually the BC wine scene, going to the Okanagan Valley.
Yeah, and which is great.
Then organizing, compare and contrast BC wines versus Italy.
Yeah.
Lots of the white wines were actually doing well.
I'd love to do an Okanagan tasting in Italy with you, with Italian wines. So, anyway, I wanted to pick your brain today, take advantage of you. The spring is coming, and a lot of people are getting excited about the Italian white wines.
Of course.
Everybody talks about Sangiovese and Nebbiolo and all the reds, but white wines are really interesting. Let's talk about why. Why are they so interesting?
My feeling is that Italian white wines have been totally under the scene, like in the background, for many reasons.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the major reason, to be honest, to get the elephant out of the room is that the a lot of the 1970s whites
weren't that good.
Weren't that good and played not a very good role in advertising Italian white wines. They were too dilute, you know.
Yeah.
But the truth is that Italy has got an incredible array of different characters, starting from the from Sicily, from Africa, all the way up to the Dolomites. And Italy is mainly a hilly and a mountainy wine area. So yeah. We should expect to see better wines.
Yeah. And also, you easily have the largest selection of grapes in the world growing in Italy.
Yeah.
Indigenous grapes.
It's around 600 of registered varieties, but there is way more.
Yeah. So what are some of the white ones? Let's start maybe in the south and move from south and go to the north. What are some of the grapes or regions that we should look at?
I like this. Like we're going to have an Italian wine journey.
Yeah.
Let's start from down south, Sicily. I think right now the Mount Etna is hot, not because it's in the
volcanic
tallest and active volcano in Europe, but actually it's hot because you have the Caricante variety, which is like very, very neutral. It's not a aromatic variety, but actually it's very, very vibrant.
Yep.
And it's got a lot of vintage potential. Something new that is about to get in the market abroad as well is the Grillo. Grillo is
Grillo here.
You already have Grillo. So that's a blend and a hybrid between Cataratto and Zibibbo. So you have the freshness, the floral element of Zibibbo and the structure of Cataratto.
Yeah, nice seafood wine, I think.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
And awesome value for money as well.
Okay. So we jump out of Sicily and go to...
Okay, so where do we go?
Should we go to Puglia? Is there anything in Puglia that we
can
talk about?
You have beautiful Bombino coming from the Altipiano, the high plains of Murgia.
Yeah.
That's a variety that is able to release a lot of sparkling wines that are very interesting. Mm-hmm. If you move from Puglia, you just cut across and you go to Campania.
Yeah.
Of course, there you have a couple of... from the Amalfi Coast, you know... 45 minutes inland dry, but even on the coast, you have a beautiful Fiano or Greco.
I love Fiano.
And, and these wines give a lot of pleasure because they are very generous with the fruit and the aromatics, but also quite round, and they are perfect to go with seafood.
These are all in Vancouver. You can find these in private wine shops, so this is great.
Yeah.
What about around Rome? And because the wines of Latium, you know, they sort of got lost. Is there a Trebbiano or anything from Rome that we can count on? Or
I think, you know, you're picking. If you look at Rome, Rome is trying to find its mojo again.
Yeah.
Rome has been making amazing wines. There's no reason not to make good wines. But once again, Frascati is the most famous one.
Yeah.
And Frascati has been a very diluted wine.
Yeah, very low.
It's time to look back. There are some tiny wineries.
Yeah.
And beautiful wineries only 20 minutes off Rome.
Yeah.
In this like 2,000 years old road on the Via Appia.
Yeah.
But if you carry on the Via Appia and you go all the way up to Abruzzo, talking about your Trebbiano, then you're going to find some serious Trebbiano.
Okay.
You know, so you cross the Maiella and the Gran Sasso mountain, 3,000 meters above the sea level, and in 20 minutes you're on the Adriatic coast. And that Trebbiano can release some very juicy whites, but also with a lot of aging potential in this case.
Okay.
Some Trebbiano can easily go for 20 years.
Okay. Okay. I'm talking with Filippo Bartolotta. Filippo, we got to keep moving. So we got to keep heading north.
Okay. Quick. So from Tuscany, stop for Vernaccia di San Gimignano. That's where Dante Alighieri, the poet of the Divine Comedy, wrote about this beautiful white almost like 1,000 years ago.
Yep.
Neutral variety, but very refreshing.
Yep.
And then you move up, I think we have to stop for sure in Emilia Romagna. Yep. And here you can have, I would go for a Sorbara. It's not a still white, but it's one of the most dynamic and refreshing sparkling that you can come across right now. It's a Lambrusco, but it's a white, kind of like a pinkish style Lambrusco.
Yeah.
Then here we have a few options. I would go right now to Soave, because Soave has been bashed like
for a long time,
super commercial wines, but Soave is on a volcanic soil. So expect to find...
It's a great site. They just need somebody to care. about yeah. making the wines.
And here, you know, in Vancouver, I found some pretty good historical producers.
Yeah.
So the source of Soave that I've seen in Vancouver is very reliable.
Yeah.
Enjoy it, because yeah. Garganica is one of the oldest Italian white varieties.
Yeah.
What else is there? Move on the western side, still go to Alto Adige.
Yeah.
So we're bordering with Austria. Mm-hmm. At this point, we have traveled almost 2,000 kilometers, six parallels. And mm-hmm. so right now you are right under the Alps, and you can come across varieties like Kerner, Silvaner, or more international varieties like Chardonnay
yeah.
and Sauvignon Blanc, but yeah. with a lot of structure
yeah.
and a lot of cleansiness.
Yeah, and acidity. And Pinot Gris, is there any help for Pinot Gris or
of
not?
Of course. Okay, yeah. so
Pinot Grigio.
Pinot Grigio goes from the Pinot Grigio delle Venezie. Mm-hmm. So that's something that you can drink every day. Mm-hmm. And it's in a good moment as well. People are making higher quality everyday Pinot Grigio. But as you get up, Pinot Grigio goes across three different regions,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
As you get up on the mountain area, yeah. Pinot Grigio becomes more structured, a little bit more like Alsatian style if you want.
Yeah.
So with some... sometimes a little residual, or maybe some orange Pinot Grigio, mm-hmm. like going towards Friuli, or even in Alto Adige, you can come across some pretty interesting mm-hmm. More Pinot Grigio with some oomph, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
There are other regions that we forget.
Yeah.
So there is Valle d'Aosta.
Yeah.
I think there you can get to some of the highest mountains, some of the highest vineyards in Europe, 1,200 mm-hmm. meters above the sea level.
Mm-hmm.
Prix Blanc is the variety. Do you have?
Yeah.
Do you have it here?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so that's light, refreshing, and mountainy.
Yeah.
And very low alcohol.
Yeah.
I love it.
And Friuli, like we have there's a number of great wines coming out of Friuli now,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah. So Friuli, like you find the Pinot Grigio will become more on the orange side.
Yeah.
As you move on the northern east of Italy, yeah. Friuli is very close to Slovenia and
yeah.
Istria. And in that side, they're moving towards, you know, thanks to one of the greatest masters of amphora made wine, that is Gravner. Yeah. There is so many people now that are producing wines more on yeah. the natural driven style.
Yep.
So Pinot Grigio, of course, Ribolla there
yeah.
is the beauty.
Ribolla Gialla, eh?
Yeah.
What about, and we skipped over Piemonte, because
yeah,
there
true.
Are white wines there.
Yeah.
We see here, we see a lot of Arnaise in this market.
Yeah. So Piemonte, you know, I skipped Piemonte because, I mean, you know, with the Barolo and Barbaresco. But Piemonte, of course, anything that you plant there is amazing. There's some
yeah.
nice Riesling
yeah.
that I actually have with some of the Canadian Somme,
yeah.
you know, like recently. But
and
the... variety to watch, I think, is Timorasso right now.
Yeah.
Southwest Piemonte
yep.
in the Alessandria region, the same type of soil that you will find in the Lange region.
Yep.
And it's something between a Sauvignon Blanc and a Nebbiolo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, totally. And just lastly, because we hear so much about it, the Alta Langa, which is a lot of sparkling wine too. What's going on there?
Alta Langa, it's funny because it's actually south. It's not Alta, it's Bassa. But Alta Langa is... is basically in the hands of some very, very intelligent entrepreneurs and winemakers that are producing mainly wines based on Chardonnay and Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's producing a little bit of Nebbiolo in there. There is a discussion
yeah.
whether to allow
white Nebbiolo.
But the result with Alta Langa is the name is carrying the sparkling, you know, Langa alone.
Yeah.
But the wines are incredibly well yeah. made, and despite being a relatively young appellation, it's lots of satisfaction, lots of delicious sparkling.
Yeah. Okay, that was a master class in white wines
minutes.
From Italy in 12 minutes.
Oh my God, what did we forget?
We'll our listeners will let us know what we forgot.
All right.
I don't think we forgot much. Filippo, great to see you. Hope to see you back. And maybe I'll just catch up with you in Italy. Where do you actually live when you're in Italy?
Good point. Florence is home.
Yeah, Florence. Not so bad.
Not so bad. Give me a shout
bad.
When you're over.
Now
we have
I'm
a,
really
we have
jealous.
Something to eat together.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Cheers.
Our guest was Filippo Bartolotta, the Italian wine journalist. That's it for this week's show. A special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Mr. Dwayne Bishop, assignment editor Sherry Caleb, and director of operations Stu Ferguson. For all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismondi, wishing you a great week ahead and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.